and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not reflect the views or endorsement of any entity. Nothing being said on this podcast should be considered as investment advice.
GM, welcome. We're back.
We're back and we're bullish, Kevin.
You're bullish.
All right, I'm bullish.
We had a little breakfast toast this morning.
We did. We had
a bull versus bear conversation between the two of us.
We did. Where are you at right now?
Let's do the intro first. We're like ready to jump right in. You're like ready to get into therapy.
Ready.
All right. Well, welcome to Hunter Proof. It is good to be back live. This is going to be an awesome show. Of course, Derek's here with me. Amanda's in the house as well. Got a little shot of Amanda over there. Good to see you. You're well lit today. You look great.
I am well lit. I know Eli already is giving me some shit for my Beams Japan shirt, but I wanted to be like, hey, I've been in Japan. I'm cool. I'm chilling with my smoothie. I love this place. Some great breakfast options here.
Every time we talk about our breakfast options, because every time Derek comes here, he gets avocado toast. It's like his jam.
It is one of the core reasons. I come to hang out with you guys, and I come for the avocado toast with the poached egg on top.
That's the only way we get you in the office.
It's true.
Eli is joining us as well. He's got the bucket hat on.
Let's go. This is going to be fun, guys.
Good to see you, Eli. This has been great. Sun's out, legs are out today.
I've been hearing it all morning. I apologize. I thought I would do something a little different. It was a little warm when I got up today.
Those are short. No, they're good.
They're a little shorter. I am rocking the Tommy Sachs Nike kicks. We can't really get them on the cam, but, I promise the fit makes sense, but, it doesn't look very, aesthetic.
You're looking good.
Camera angle.
Sun's out, buns out. Or what do they say? What is it?
Sun's out, guns out.
Guns out. Okay. In your case, buns out, I guess. All right. That's how the show's going. It's Friday. We want to welcome also artist John Gerard to the show, who's going to be here during the first half of the show. John, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you. Surviving.
Thank you for joining us from London, man. You look like you're in a very cozy spot. Do you have a glass of vino there as well to go with that background?
Well, I'm in London, so yes.
I do. There we go. That's what I'm talking about. Well, it's an honor to have
PM,
you.
It's 6 p.m., people.
It's 6 p.m. You're
no,
good.
No breakfast drinking.
You're good. It's the weekend. You know what? Depending on floor price, we breakfast drink over here too. So it's okay. It is good to have you.
I think we need a live like nighttime Hunter Proof where we do a little night drinking and a little talking about NFTs. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. We would just get a little crazy. I'm down with that. We should do a live nighttime Hunter Proof.
I'm into it. John's in.
Well, that'll be daytime for you, John. So you'll have to day drink with us at that point. So, all right. Twist your arm. Well, we'll check back in with you in a bit. It's an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, we got a lot of great topics to talk about. We're going to be talking about traditional finance is jumping into crypto. We have some big news and breaking news that just happened 20 minutes ago that we want to cover that you just pulled up, what I wasn't even familiar with. Some stuff we'll get into in a second.
Totally.
We have a few fun topics around digital art. We also have another episode of the Mythics Chronicles, which is our nice little mini documentary style, fun little over the shoulder shot of all of the craziness that goes into building the art collection and all the mechanics behind Mythics, which I don't know if we can say. Well, we do have another video coming, like a real professional animated video coming for Mythics, and I showed it to you this morning.
I just saw it. It's really well done.
It's good.
You guys are crushing the content side for Mythics. It's been fun to watch you put those pieces together.
It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, a couple of last minute housekeeping things. Follow us on Proof Podcasts at Proof Podcasts on Twitter. You can turn on notifications there. We don't tweet about random stuff. It's only when new episodes and content is released. And that way you can get all the latest episodes from us. Also, for those of you that are joining us on Spaces, you're missing out on the YouTube video. So there actually is live video on YouTube. You can come on over and join the conversation on YouTube video if you want to see the great short shorts we have going on this morning. You'll only get Justin.
Yes, sir.
Justin would be amazing when in short shorts. Justin's not wearing short shorts. Derek is today, but if you want to see Derek's legs, only on YouTube. And you'll have to click the 18 plus button there to get in.
Ironically, you know, I'm here obviously reading the comments on YouTube, and ironically, Justin just had the best comment. He says, actually, it is skies out, thighs out. And that is exactly what he's here.
Skies out, thighs out.
Skies out, thighs out.
So I am doing the thing right now. Let's go.
It is a beautiful, warm day in LA. So skies out, thighs out.
There we go.
All right. Let's jump into story number one.
Yes. So the question, I mean, this is an NFT show.
Yes.
This is a consumer show. But we operate in a world that is like very correlated with money and money, like, you know, financial activity and financial institutions and disintermediation of, you know, financial functions and protocols. And so, you know, it's always helpful when you look at our space, our little corner of the internet, to take it in context to what's going out there in the world. And I think something that's been happening over the last couple of weeks is this enthusiasm marked by a few different announcements and newsworthy clippings around traditional finance coming into our space. And so this isn't, you know, a show about price or about number go up, but what I will say is when the SEC came out and levied charges against Coinbase running an unregulated exchange, and I think folks looked at the merits of that and were confused about kind of the positioning there. Taken in context, we just didn't really see price be affected very much. And so when I think about, you know, the marginal seller after 18 months of just a brutal bear market, not really, you know, moving size or moving position during like these periods of bad news, it's usually a sign that selling might be exhausted and price is starting to kind of range, and there just isn't really a ton of a negative, you know, downswings in terms of like the price impact against like news like this.
Yeah.
I would say
saying is basically in the past, there's been a bomb that's been dropped by some, it can be any number of reasons, but the big ones are when government steps in.
Yep.
And you'll see, boom, like we see a 5, 7, 8, 10% drop in price.
Sometimes more.
And we're not, you didn't see it this time.
Didn't see it this time. So that's one kind of indicator I always look for in terms of like where bottoms are starting to form and things are starting to range around kind of like the, you know, the leading assets in our space. I would say the opposite is also something I look for because in bear markets, good news doesn't really move the price of Bitcoin or Ethereum. And what we're seeing over the last week is that we're printing these, you know, these gains in Bitcoin and Ethereum to the point where, you know, Bitcoin is over 30K right now. Mm-hmm. This is supposed to be a bear market, right? We're like, you know, almost 50% off of all-time highs. Ethereum is, you know, is ripping as well. We're seeing kind of Ethereum move in lockstep. And so, you know, I would say like the things to point out here are things like the EDX market. So the new Citadel secure asset, digital asset exchange that they're building was kind of like publicly announced with Fidelity and Charles Schwab this week. I would say, you know, the IMF came out and said, you know, the countries banning crypto may not be as effective in the long run. We saw Powell say that the resiliency of crypto was something that was surprising. And
that was huge.
It was a big deal. We saw, you know, BlackRock's ETF news, you know, they're...
That didn't get approved though, right? Or
did not get approved.
That's a spot ETF, not a futures.
Correct. That's a spot ETF, and their record on these ETFs is actually like formidable. The thinking is like, well, BlackRock must know something or know about some pending possibility of an approval.
Well, you see what they changed, right? They said they decided to provide more information about who's actually trading the spot ETF in this pack, new package.
Kevin, when you say spot ETF, I know what that means, but maybe for those who don't, that means they're not holding the actual asset, right? But they hold against the price and the movement in price. Is that right?
Yeah, do you want to explain? You'd know more about the actual dynamics behind that.
Just because I know we have only like 3 minutes left to get this, I want to make the actual point made.
Yeah.
So the long and short of it is like there's a ton of financial infrastructure that's now starting to support institutions coming into our space. And the question then becomes, well, like, what does that do to NFTs? So I'll open it up to you guys and say, you know, this infrastructure that's now starting to come in and see real size start to kind of play in this world. What is coming up for you guys as it relates to NFTs?
In terms of how this actually impacts what we're doing?
I think, like, let's take a little, you know, armchair speculation and see if we can come up with some ideas.
Yeah, well, so I think a couple things. Real quick to touch on Eli's point, like, there's a difference between ETFs that are trading future value of ETFs versus real-time value of ETFs, or ETFs that are applied to real-time value of actual spot prices. And we haven't seen the real legitimate ETF be approved yet, right? And the hope is that if an ETF is approved, that allows both institutional buyers and average consumer buyers that don't have access to actually come in and buy crypto to come in, right? And that could be, you know, I don't care about signing up for Coinbase, it's too scary. That could be, hey, my company allows my 401k to invest in ETFs, and I can pick anyone I want. And now I can I have an ETF to choose that's on the crypto side. So what does that do? That brings in more volume and more buying power into crypto. And our hope, your thesis this morning when we were chatting over coffee was that if crypto goes up, the trickle down effects come down to actual NFTs, meaning that as prices increase and your wallets feel a little bit more padded, you're more likely to play at the edges, which where there's more risk.
I think that's typically how these markets have worked, right? So, like, as let's call it these objects continue, like store value objects, as an example, continue to melt up in price. There's a wealth effect that's created. There's also, it acts as kind of the best possible marketing for, you know, the risk assets that surround those leading assets. And what we've seen time and time again over these cycles is people move further along the risk curve around digital assets to find the next best play. I would say NFTs are still relatively small. Like, our industry is still relatively small compared to crypto broadly. And I feel like it has been, for many purposes, sufficiently de-risked. And we saw Alan Howard this week at the Coinbase State of Crypto Summit talk about generative art collecting as a new movement. To institutional audiences, right? This is a very institutional conference. And so my view is, sorry, go ahead, Eli. No,
go ahead. We got to hear the view.
The view is that, you know, I'm convict, I have a ton of conviction on NFTs and digital objects for all sorts of different purposes. But my view is that these things work hand in hand in terms of these cycles. And so I'm pretty, you know, bullish long run on this news affecting our corner of the internet on some time frame.
Yeah.
The TLDR here, Eli, I think is and I'm sure you'd agree with this too, is like, what's good for crypto is good for NFTs at the end of the day. Like, if crypto's tanking as a store of value, it's not going to bode well for the future of NFTs in the short term.
I think that's right.
Yeah, it's interesting. In Canada, we've actually had these ETFs since 2021, and to sort of illustrate the point that you guys are making, one of the things you can do is there's something called a tax-free savings account in Canada. And within those accounts, you can now invest in those ETFs. And if you're bullish on ETH, BTC, and over time, price goes up of either of those two assets, you get to participate in that upside tax-free entirely. And so, you know, I think to your point, Kevin, whether it's 401ks in the US or that type of vehicle and account here, that integration leads to further adoption. And then to your point, Derek, that moves down the curve over time. Quickly on your point, you know, Alan Howard, one of the biggest traditional art collectors, you mentioned him in passing there, Derek. I just love that he's describing this as a movement. And, you know, the thing about a movement that I think is instructive is that it's disregarded, it's dismissed, it's hard to understand by the entrenched. And, you know, we saw that after the Goose sale, that the top line headline at Art News was the final hurrah for NFTs. Mm. And so I think you've got Alan over here talking about a movement. You've got the entrenched Art News talking about the last hurrah. I think we're onto something there.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. I want to say, I have to kind of fill the proof employee quota by saying hide your squiggles. You know, I feel like this is incredibly bullish for squiggles and my bags. No, but seriously, my opinion is that this absolutely is super bullish for NFTs. I really relate to Derek on his forever bullishness, because that this is where I this I think is the moment where we could really kind of see this massive rush towards, especially some of these more historical pieces, on-chain pieces, obviously art blocks, and, you know, in general, greater generative art. That's why I'm really excited to see John Gerard here to kind of talk about what makes traditional artists want to kind of come into this space and into generative art. But yeah, I think it's just incredibly, incredibly bullish on generative art.
Traditional artists, I'm going to take you up on that. Traditional artists, we're going to talk about that.
I love it.
I've been making game engine based works for 20 years. So we'll come back to traditional artists.
No, we're ready.
Please school me. I'm ready to learn.
I gotta say,
I'm gonna express myself.
John, this is perfect timing, man. Let's kick it off with you. It's so great to have you on the show, and I'm gonna pass this off to Eli so that you guys can have a little conversation. But thanks for joining us.
Yeah, John. Let's.
You know, it's a new forum for me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, let's pull on that thread a little bit, John. You know, digital art, you working with data, this is not new to you. And we'll come back ultimately to the fact that you have this upcoming Art Blocks Pace Verso release next week. But take us back first. When Amanda calls you a traditional artist and you have that visceral reaction, where does that come from?
Amanda, I already like you, but I'm going to talk to you about that. Okay,
please.
So here we are. So actually, 1994, I enter university. I'm like 19. And it's a really interesting year because 1994 is the year that Netscape Navigator is released. So it's like the year that there is a public interface to the internet. I didn't have that before. So the university is Oxford University. I'm this kid from Ireland, like rural Ireland. Like, and I just blow into this crazy sophisticated place called Oxford University. Yeah. I use my key card and like I get into these computer science labs. Like I'm an art student in a university. Art schools in 1994 don't have any computers. I mean, they might have like a Mac. I think the Mac that's like literally in a museum now, like the little floppy disk, like literally like the screen is about that size. But the computer science labs are like rocking because 1994, it's kind of rocking, you know? So slide my card in, I come, Netscape Navigator. I don't have to like, I don't know, command line. I just go in, you know? Also, in the UK in 1994, music is coming in from America, from Detroit, from Chicago. All my buddies who are like really sophisticated, really rich, unlike me, who wasn't either, get in their car, they drive to Manchester. We all go to the Hacienda. And I'm in the Hacienda. This music's coming in. I'm like, if computers does this to music, what's it going to do to art? So I'm like in the browser going, this is interesting. I'm in the club going, this is interesting. And I have been waiting a long time for the potential of the digital for art. We're just hitting it right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that, John.
Art Blocks is like, we're going to talk about data as the core contemporary language.
Yes, let's talk about that.
That's what I'm interested in. But let me just finish. Let me finish about Oxford. Just one second. So the second thing after techno, not techno, it's like house music in 1995, basically. The second thing I discovered was 3D scanning. And I made my first scan in Oxford in 96. And I was like, okay, so here you have like an image, but it's three-dimensional, data-driven. What are we going to do with this? It took me like 5 years to get into a game engine. Like that was how long it took. So I had to just be a patient artist, got into the game engine. I did a BFA sculpture, MFA art and technology, MSc computer science. Finally, 01, I finally get the missing part, which is like art schools really, even now, don't really teach people how the language of code. So like I get in and like, basically, my first work I released in a game engine in Miami was in 05. and it was up on the wall. It was encapsulated. It was a computer, a screen. I kind of tricked the collectors into thinking they're buying a sculpture. They're actually buying a game engine, basically. Yeah. So my first game engine went into the world in 05.
Got it.
And so that's my backstory.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful, John. Tell me, where did blockchain for you come into the mix? How do you translate data and that,
that work is
you've been doing for
story.
So long? Yeah,
that's a funny story. Briefly. So weirdly, I made my first NFT, unbeknownst to me, in 2019. Totally unbeknownst to me, because Casey Rias, who I know from Ars Electronica, like 20 years ago, who went on to do processing.
Yes.
Processing is the backbone of art blocks. And him and Ben, like incredible, just like generous teachers and artists.
Yeah.
They made processing and a whole bunch of young artists were able to go like, okay, image, data, you know, they could do that. Before processing, that was like way more challenging. So Casey's an old buddy from like 20 years ago in Ars Electronica, which is like Ars Electronica is a famous new media place in Austria. I spent 3 years there as an artist in residence until they finally like literally asked me to leave in 2004. They were like, get out. But Casey has known me a long time. He did something called A2P 19 Bitmark chain.
Yes.
Artists swapped images. He wrote to me like 2 weeks ago and said they were NFTs. I just, you know, we just didn't have that language.
Yes.
They were NFTs. So I made an accidental NFT in 19 with Casey, which was called Artist to Peer. It was a beautiful little JPEG. I don't do media. I don't do MP4s. I don't do JPEG. I don't do any of that stuff. I'm a data guy. You know, I'm like a temporal world, data world guy. Anyway, I did this thing posted a picture actually of an oil slick, which I had taken many years earlier. And like I swapped to these incredible artists, like, because Casey's just like such an incredible connector. He's so generous, you know?
Yeah.
So all these artists are swapping. And then he wrote to me last week. He was like, John, actually, it was an NFT project. I was like, and I didn't know.
There you go.
But the next NFT, which actually was, and I'm going to make the hardest line between media,
sure,
which is historic, and data, which is the future. I'm going to make a really hard line here.
Yes.
So, you know, I released my first, I started working in software in the contemporary art world in like 05, 2005.
Yeah.
Beeple blows up and I'm like offended. I'm like, guys, you're talking about a transaction here. I get the transaction, but I don't like the work. And also I don't like the fact that everybody's going crazy about a JPEG. Like it's just not the subject. This is not the subject. This is like the fucking history here. Media, JPEGs and MP4s are like, I mean, we're going back to the 60s. Can we talk about data?
So John, let's zoom forward a little bit to Western Flag, your first NFT.
No, no, no.
That
I'll
maybe
get there.
Is.
I'm getting there.
Yeah.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, let's go there.
So I'm releasing an MP4, which is a 30-second extract from a game engine-based work. I couldn't get a game engine on before WebGL. I couldn't get a game engine into the NFT ecosystem at that point. So I like in extreme pain because in the game engine there is no temporal. It's atemporal. It is just world making. I make a 30-second extract from Western Flag, from the core of Western Flag, midsummer. From an AP. I release it on Foundation as a 30-second looping MP4 in a great pain. Happily, it is the first NFT the Los Angeles County Museum of Art has ever acquired. That was a good outcome from that. But the whole process was awful. I actually pulled out of NFTs for a year. I was like, I can't make media. I've never made media. Not going to do that. So my producer, about 6 months into my recovery period, I mean, literally, he said, WebGL. I've just come across a single WebGL. Mm-hmm. You can put very austere data worlds in the browser. I was like, go. And Ariel from PaceVersa said, we have just made a relationship with Artblocks, which I had been tracking for 6 months, but I had no way to get in. I mean, I didn't know Eric.
Sure.
Now, I didn't have any way. I could jump into the Discord and be like, I don't know, some weird guy, you know, whatever.
Sure.
So, like, Aero was like, actually, you have a month, but we do have, you know, this thing coming. I was like, done.
Got it.
So Petronational, the first work, took 1 month.
Wow.
And I love that project. John, tell,
for those who don't know, talk just a little bit about Petronational.
Okay. So I'm very interested in power.
Yeah.
And like, the word power means two things. It means energy and it means force. Many different types of force. So Petronational takes the 195 countries in the UN list. It's not all the countries in the world. It's only the 195 that are in the UN. Takes their shape, fills it with a generative algorithmic representation of a petrol slick. Like, a petrol slick is fascinating because it's so beautiful. Mm. And yet it is like totally toxic and it's not going to work. You know, it's like pollution basically, but still alluring. You know what I mean? You kind of want to lean into it, but it's like, so it's sort of like the perfect metaphor for like contemporary life. It's like, we love to be so mobile. We love to go to wherever, but actually it's not really working because climate change and all that stuff. So anyway, so I do this piece, 195 country shapes filled with gasoline slick. Depending on the amount of consumption, it's either thicker or thinner. So like countries like Ghana are just barely there. They're just like, okay, so that is a thick one. I don't know which one that is, but like that's a big consumer. So it's a thick gasoline layer. And like countries that are like thinner are just this beautiful, like African countries are like a very subtle, thin slick. Okay. So we released it and like, thank you to the community. It flew into the world and it was in the world. And I don't know if you guys know, but the Pompidou just got Nigeria recently, which is a very proud moment for me. However, I also want to say like my work's in MoMA, XE's in MoMA. My game worlds are in Tate, S of MoMA, LACMA, I mean, just you name it. I mean, all over the world. So it's not like a museum acquiring a piece of software is new for me. A museum acquiring a piece of software that's distributed using the blockchain is new for me. That was the first one. But rather beautifully, getting back to Casey had done this incredible show on Feral File with Jesse Damiani called Artist Sketches. And I made a piece called Smoke Hands, 100 bucks, edition of 100. The kids on Feral File just ran away with it. So in the Pompidou, you have Smoke Hands for 100 bucks. That's the first one. Then you have Petronational. Probably the floor price is like 4 Ethereum now. Yeah. Okay? Yeah. And then you have a CryptoPunk all in a line.
Oh, amazing.
And I just was like, I love that the museum. Yeah, right now.
Yeah, those are on display now. Yeah.
I love that the museum like takes it all on, puts them in a row and kind of flattens them. They're like, this is art. Mm. That's 100 Ethereum. That's 4 Ethereum. That's 100 bucks. But you know what? Yeah. They're all in a row in the museum. So I'm into that.
So
where are we?
I heard you.
Are we done with Petronational?
Just quickly, I heard you yesterday. I was listening to you talk, describe the blockchain as a form of public art and actually moving away in some respects from the institutions and the private collectors who own a piece of yours and you never see it again. Yeah. Talk about that for a moment.
Not just that, but there's so many layers to that. So, you know, I'm interested in data and I'm interested in static, like which comes from data. Like artists, like I'm a big collector of Kim Asendorf because there is an energy that comes from his work that talks about contemporary conditions. The world is being changed by data. So I have watched the traditional art world, can we use that word? Because I can say that, become more analog. Since I stepped in, it's become more analog. It's become less experimental. People are talking about paintings, ceramics. And I'm like, don't get me wrong. I mean, I love those things, you know? But like, what is the pertinence to contemporary conditions now of ceramics?
Yes.
I'm a bit disconnected, number one. Secondly, we live in a world of hard borders. If you're very hard borders, 700 people drowned in the Mediterranean trying to get to Greece recently, like really tragically. I'm showing in the Hayward right now, big LED wall, showing a simulation. Most of the world can't get to England.
Yeah.
They can't get in. So the XE is, I would call it geography. It is place. So the beauty of WebGL in the browser is that I can make culture. I can make visual culture anybody on earth, I don't care if they buy it or not. That is not why I'm here. I'm here because they can see it and it can move them. Sure, if you get one, you can, you know, you can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
But I think that the support that's flowed from the blockchain via the NFT mechanism to digital artists is the big deal.
Yeah.
Kim Assendorf can sit at his desk and code as an artist now. 3 years ago, the art world, they were not interested. And yeah, they were missing something. So I just want to celebrate, like, I just want to celebrate that because, like, I sneaked in and I've been there a long time. I've been there 20 years.
Yeah.
But I'm done with museums. I've showed in so many museums. I just want to show in the street.
Yeah, I love that.
That's John, the only place. And for me,
Yeah. No, just as we wrap up here, John, let's talk about the project next week. I know it's short. We could talk forever. Let's talk about World Flag, the way that it's representative of some of these themes we've been talking about, and give us a little background on that.
Done. How long do I have? Give me my slot. Oh, 25 seconds. Okay. World Flag is 195 generative works on art blocks. Each one is a smoke flag, which is like printed with this thing we invented. Do a variation. Go down, do a variation. Do a variation because that's his nighttime in Yemen. They're all set in these future deserts that in a weird way, like the failure of I've been at 3 climate change conferences. All the nations get together. Nothing changes. We're burning 100 million barrels of oil a day. It's kind of a real protest work, actually. But it's also, I spent a year on it. I said with Petronational, it took a month. I will come back to this space, to Art Blocks, with something that I'm going to really stand over. And that is World Flag. That's what it is.
I appreciate that, John. Well, two things. One, thank you so much for coming on. I'm thrilled to get to spend some time with you. And then two, good luck next week. I'm sure it will go well. This is you're also marking the 1 year so-called anniversary of the first Art Blocks Pace Verso.
Yeah.
I've got my hat on here. So all in the family. And appreciate
it. I got my hat on too, but it's a different one. Thank you.
All right, thanks so
much. I'll tell you about that next time.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're an absolute legend, John. Bitch. Thank you for being on the show. That was awesome.
So, I have more to say.
Big shout out to.
I just want to.
Hey, listen, we need to do an extended like hour plus with you because this is just too short for your wisdom and knowledge in the space. So let's make that happen, and we'll make sure we're also bringing some wine to the table so we can have a real fun conversation.
Yes.
I just want to say shout out to Ariel. Yeah. I also want to say shout out to Ariel because she's in the audience here on YouTube joining in. And you mentioned her. She's been an incredible, addition to Pace and an incredible connector of these digital artists into the space. So we want to say thank you for hanging out. And
thanks, John. Enjoy the wine. John. Enjoy your evening. Enjoy your weekend. That was awesome.
That was great. What a cool dude.
I know. I'm actually going to be in London in a few weeks. Maybe I can see if I can make that happen. That sounds like fun. All right. Well, it is that time again where we like to give you a little behind the scenes sneak peek of our upcoming Mythics collection. There's a lot of hard work and effort going into this collection. It is by far our most ambitious art project to date. And we have a little minute long video or so, something like that. Let's take a look.
Two bins, okay. Two bins is a trait?
Two bins is trait adjacent. You know, two bins is like our little Where's Waldo of this world. Two bins is our way to get into a little bit of mischief in terms of storytelling and visuals. And so Luke had done this sketch of like a wizard bird. And so I started playing around and eventually came up with this little guy. So it's nice. It's like Luke and I made a little baby together and out popped Tubins. You know who has a lot of Tubins on them? This guy over here, Felix. He's in a meeting. He's actually getting work done. I don't think we should put this up yet. In my Photoshop file, I was trying to figure out what to name it. And then Luke and I, for like a couple of hours, just went back and forth, like sending names like tubes, tube bobbins, tubers, like, and eventually we landed on Tubins. And once we had the name, the character became real to us. And ever since then, it's just been one long riff of like, oh, Tubins would do this, Tubins would do that. Burnt toast, Tubins. When you go to a restaurant and you ask for a salad, but they say all they have is arugula, Tubins. That happened to me once. Tubins is all about like causing havoc. To be honest, there was a bubonic plague. Honestly, that's why Luke is no longer with us. Looking back now, I regret making the comment on his age because as you can tell, he's no longer with us. That age caught up to him. That mixed with Tubins. Everyone, you should always wash your hands.
Oh, we got a couple of gems back here. Danny, and we have Ty. You should go check out what they're working on.
Yeah, what do you guys work?
It's pretty impressive.
Before you choose to mint your mythic, if you have a choice through the legendary or runic eggs, you can see all of the different traits for the mythic. If it's new, how many times it's been minted in the collection so far, the rarity, that way you can make an informed decision on, you know, which mythic is right for you. So, and as you can see, you know, this mythic is just completely decked out, every trait possible, all the tools and weapons just ready for anything. That'll happen in Valaria.
Your flight getting delayed. That's Tubins. Financial crashes. Tubins. You not being able to grow chest hair like this beautiful man over here, Burt Reynolds. Tubins. The introduction of CCO to Moonbirds. Tubins.
I'm working on the next step of the hatching, which is the Mythics collection. So yeah, it's basically like an Aladdin page that will go to entire collection. And we'll have like some sections about, you know, the mechanics, also call to actions to go to claiming the mythic egg, denominate the oddity, and also activate the notifications to know when your egg or your oddity will be burned. And of course, well, showing the full collection of the entire mythics.
Tubins is also responsible for True Detective Season 2. That's a really, really egregious kind of thing that we all had to suffer through. Surprisingly, though, the pandemic had nothing to do with Tubins, so he's in the clear there. And there might just be a Dread Tubins. Not saying, but maybe one or two could pop up in the collection. He likes jumping around from wallet to wallet, just kind of appears out of nowhere, causes a little havoc. Maybe just keep an eye open for him. Who knows?
Well, it's me, Luke, and I'm totally not dead. I'm right here, if you can see me. Hi, guys.
I love it.
That was awesome.
That was some really, I actually hadn't seen that until just now.
Who's writing those and putting those together? Those are amazing.
I think it's mostly Mal, right? Is it mostly Mal?
It's just Mal. It's just Mal and like Colin's like just straight humor. He's so funny that I don't think it's that hard to just put something together. I was just literally in the back just cackling as I was watching this. I've seen it before. I didn't think I saw that last edit at the end. It was too good. I'm just cackling. So funny.
I didn't want to say it, but it was Tubins that did CC0. So it feels good. Feels good that we got that out there.
Are they also running your Twitter account?
They are. Yeah. Yeah. They deal with all that. So. All right. Amanda, how's things going in the community? Are people enjoying this episode? Is there anything we can tell them to make them happy?
You know what actually would make someone happy? Every episode, someone asks me to look at your hair, to see your hair. They don't believe me that you have like a full head of hair. Kevin,
why is that? The number of times people call me bald, maybe it's because I do a podcast with Tim Ferriss. I do have hair underneath here. There is full hair. It's a little not fully grown out, but you know, I've always had this kind of like little receding thing here. So that's not actually me going bald, and the top is not bald. So there's hair there, people. There's hair there. Carpet matches. I don't know how that works. What the?
No,
I'm talking about my beard. No, my beard is. Listen, it's Friday. If you don't don't boo me like short shorts guy. Fuck, Jesus. Okay, it's a live show. Okay, sorry. Okay, we can't edit this. All right.
But comments about the actual video. A lot of people are loving it. They are saying that this is what they're tuning in for these mythic segments. they love the Weekend at Luke's part. I thought that was so funny. Oh my God. Everyone is just always vibing with these. I'm going to try to push Mal into just making this like a full series. Like, who needs other podcasts and media? Like, why can't we just, have a full on, The Office, you know, a full on The Office reality show. I think we can make it happen. Let's go.
Seriously. Amanda, one question there. At the very end of that, there was a little reference about a Tubin wallet thing. Are your lips sealed on that?
My lips are sealed and yours should be too. But it is kind of cool how Tubin's is just such a mischievous little character. He just finds himself in a bunch of places. So. It should be fun. I'm getting so excited, guys. Like, we are down to the wire. I know we haven't actually said when the hatching date is, and you guys will find out very soon. But we are getting down to the wire, getting really prepped, getting everything super tight. And I have to say that it's such a good story, such good lore. I'm really, really excited to see all the things that we kind of build out of this project.
100%. Love it. All right. Let's get around to the next story. Yeah.
Let's do it. Eli, you want to kick us off? I think you called out this first one, but we've got some cool stuff happening with Pharrell and Paris Fashion Week and borrowing some of the motifs of our space for that collection.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so this week, I think maybe today's Friday, maybe Tuesday or something to that effect, LVMH had their big show in Paris. And that was the first time that Pharrell, as I think his title is lead designer or lead creative director of LVMH, was responsible or had ownership over that collection. And I think the relevant piece here is that throughout that show, across many garments, including his, we had this pixel motif. And that's sort of fun in and of itself, but the theme or sort of the broader context that I think is interesting is that folks who are digitally native have been elevated across the board in many of the biggest brands into really significant roles of influence. And then we're seeing that now translated across those brands and distilled in different ways across those brands and to those audiences. And so you're taking, you know, themes and aesthetics that are wholly digital and that have resonance in the things we're doing on the NFT side and broadcasting that to all sorts of different audiences. There's a nostalgia associated with that as well as, of course. And so as we see these tastemakers who are digitally native occupy these new roles, I think that comes back to the things we're doing here in interesting ways over time.
Yeah. This was a really, really fun thing for me to witness. I don't follow the fashion world that closely. Like, it's not.
Oh, you don't?
Okay. It's going to be one of those days. All right. We're going back and forth. I see you. All right. So I will say that jacket is dope though. It's look at sick. That jacket. Yes. I don't own a single Louis Vuitton thing. I'm not like that guy, but like I'd wear that jacket in a heartbeat. I love that pixel vibe.
It's awesome. Yeah.
I honestly, like, I'm not a big like LVMH person either. And mm-hmm. I would take it all. Like, even if it's men's fashion, like some of the fits are so, so good. A lot of the people, especially in the beginning of the show, are always excited to see what Eli is wearing. You know, somebody named Casey, I'm assuming it's a friend that you paid, but said, you know, look at that drip on Eli. So I'm not surprised that you were the one who kind of picked this up.
Yeah, we need to outdrip Eli.
At some point we will. he does come in looking fresh every episode. I love Pixel Pete's comment on your post here, Eli. Pixel Pete, who was our guest last week. Pixel Pete needs Pixel Suit. It's pretty awesome.
Let's go, Pixel. Nice. Derek, why don't you kick us into the next one, which I think is actually really interesting.
Yeah, so there's a couple, I think, just like we'll just flow right through into the digital fashion stuff because I think this is kind of top of mind right now.
Yeah.
90cc this past, during Paris Fashion Week, launched this new product with IYK called the Autograph Module. And so IYK, as some folks know, they build software for NFC chips to kind of build these bridges between the digital and the physical. Part of that platform is being able to create like these very specific modules that you can be presented with after you do the tapping. And so they've all been working pretty closely with the 90cc folks on pioneering a whole bunch of these really cool products. The most recent one that they announced this week was called the Autograph Module, which allows users to sign and permanently attach autographs to IYK-powered items using their phones. So they're cryptographically verifiable. They become part of the item's history and provenance. You can secure that connection and memory for as long as that is owned by the NFT. And the standard by which they've built this module on top is called ERC-6551, and it allows NFTs to own other NFTs. There's been a working group that's been working on this standard, the 6551 standard, for a while. Benny over at Future Primitive is one of the core contributors here, and it's really cool. I mean, we're starting to see projects leverage the design space of NFTs owning other NFTs, and here, your hat, your shirt, these things can now own things like autographs as like a timestamp or a proof of provenance for having met somebody in the real world. I will also say a shout out to Colby Mugrabi, who wrote about this. I posted a thread about this earlier this week, and she wrote in the comments, like, how cool would it be if we could do a Chromie Squiggle like that you own signing somebody's digital merch or physical merch. And so the IYK guys caught wind of it, and now they're starting to work on what it means to, instead of just signing something with your finger, use your Chromie Squiggle that you own to be able to possibly authenticate that you met somebody who owns a Chromie Squiggle and have it attached to the thing that you chipped. So there's some cool signature authentication design stuff that I think will happen out of this autograph module, but this was the first product, and IYK and 90cc are known for kind of pioneering some of the cool stuff here.
Yeah, it's really cool. So let's just for this specific use case, I just want to spend 2 seconds and just really dissect what's going on here. So you're at a basketball game.
Yep.
Steph Curry walks by you.
Yep.
And you're like, oh my God, I met Steph Curry. I'm wearing a shirt that has 90cc chip embedded in it.
Yeah.
Steph could walk up. Steph would have to have a wallet on his phone.
Correct.
Okay.
And that's, so I need to go through this flow and confirm that. But my understanding is Steph would take his phone, tap it against the object, sign it on his phone. And then it would be a cryptographic proof that Steph's wallet and the signature that is being applied by like function of that wallet tapping, that piece of merch actually signed your NFT.
Right. Gotcha. So you're going to want to have a signature wallet that doesn't have any other NFTs in it, because like that could be a signature to sell some other NFTs, right? You don't know what that there could be a rogue NFC chip inside of that, that isn't made by them. That could then trick you into signing another signature.
Yeah. So the edge cases, I see where you're going with this. So first of all, I need to confirm that flow I just described is the right one. I need to actually go through this. But if it is true, then I think, like any of this stuff, there's going to be edge cases that need to get worked out over time. And I think standards will get built around it. But the concept of being able to apply like a digital signature that's cryptographically secured, that was inputted by somebody whose wallet you can trust to be theirs, like that is kind of what's happening here and getting bundled together.
It's really cool. I mean, initially I know a lot of people were thinking about the game design space where a character can own assets, other assets that are associated with that particular avatar, whatever it may be. This is an application of that tech that is completely different.
Totally.
And because this is such new technology, I mean, we need time to really digest what it's all capable of. I need like a weekend just to think on all of the use cases.
Yeah, I caught up with the IYK guys last week, and they said, we just started working on this. We think it's awesome. We're working on it with G, and we're going to try and bang this thing out by, Fashion Week.
That's so cool.
So they whipped it up. They worked on it with G, and you know, now we've got this new primitive that I think people can see, and it's out there in the world. And to your point, Kev, we'll get battle tested, and and these things will improve over time.
It's so cool to see this meet physicals, because we've had so many issues with this traditionally. That I just, you can point to. I mean, there's been, how many times have you heard about sports memorabilia just being forged with fake signatures, you know, that never actually happened? Even traditional art. I mean, I know when Salvador Dali was sick near the end of his life, it was rumored, I think it's pretty much true at this point, that the people that were close to him, I think it was his wife, that was just, or ex-wife or something like that, that was creating prints and just signing his name to it, just over and over and over and over again, because there was money to be made there based on these prints, these presses. And, you know, there is a world where if someone had safeguarded their private key and only they could do the signature, it is truly authenticated that you were there with that person, right?
I think that's right. And having had a minute to think about it, to kind of prevent that security vector that you're describing, where you're exposing your cold storage stuff to the application here, you could use something like a delegate cache or some wallet abstraction to have like a separate public private key that's authenticating the signature.
There'd probably just be a signing app that would be its own dedicated wallet, doesn't really need much more in it, and it's, you don't ever keep any other NFTs there. It's just like, this is what I sign with when I'm doing actual signatures, right?
Yeah exactly.
Very cool. Who found this? Well, you found this. You're involved in all this shit.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
You've invested in probably everything we've talked about today, except for Twitter.
IYK and 90cc are two companies that I work closely with, and they're both thinking about like the fashion space in particular as like a very big go-to-market.
Yeah, very cool. Love it.
Derek, just quickly, let me ask you, maybe this is a naive question, but how does the physical relate to the token that now holds all of those signatures? Like, you know, if I collect a bunch of signatures from Steph Curry and otherwise, and can I sell that physical?
You can.
That contains those signatures, or correct. Is it the token and physical can be unbundled?
So the token is associated with the physical. When you tap the NFC chip, that digital representation on the blockchain can actually be disaggregated from the physical. That's why they call it proof of proximity, right? So anyone that has proximity ownership over the object, and they've created this two-tap system whereby like the checking of proximity can happen over a period of time, so it's not just somebody swiping it from you every minute. But that whoever owns the shirt has the ability to own the digital, because it travels together. And so the NFT owning the NFT is this NFT that's associated with the physical now owning these sub-NFTs within the NFT. And so if you own the shirt and you sell it to somebody else, they will now have that full provenance by virtue of the on-chain representation of the shirt owning the signature.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, it changes everything. I mean, you can imagine the future of all collectible sports cards and everything like that are just going to have bundled NFC chips in them.
Totally.
That have all these different types of data, where you went, where you took it to, you know, it doesn't have to be the actual artist. It could be a whole slew of different things.
The cool thing too is like Tyler Hobbs used IYK at Art Basel. We're now seeing fashion products use NFC chips. It's now moving into things like consumer products and consumer goods. The design space here of like blockchain meets physical stuff, I think NFC chips represent like a very credible opportunity for that, those worlds to collide in like virtually every category.
Do you have any sense, last question, I know we got to move on real quick to a couple more stories, but do you have any sense what the actual shelf life is for an NFC chip?
I know they're not battery powered.
Right.
So like it's actually quite long. I don't have that answer off the top of my head, but yeah. I think it's fairly long.
Yeah, without batteries, it could be, you know, many, many decades.
Yeah.
So as we've seen with old computers and things like that. So yeah, really curious to see how that all plays out. But that's awesome. All right. Well, we've got a couple more stories hit on real quick. Fortnite's collab with Nike NFTs platform doesn't include in-game NFTs.
It doesn't include, so I don't know that much about this story yet. So what's the context here?
This was a story that CT had brought up around Nike NFTs that we were supposed to have fully dived into.
Sorry, CT, Eli,
we blew it, CT. So, Eli, do you have the background here?
I do not.
Did I have this one? I'm so embarrassed. All right, so I can give you broad strokes. I have a couple of notes that I wrote down. So Dotswoosh, which we've talked about here on this show, high supply, low cost NFT project by the folks over at Nike. they're partnering with Fortnite, which massive, massive environment. Just, you know, one of the most popular environments on planet Earth right now. They're co-branding a new product called Airforia, and it's a virtual experience where players can earn Air Max 1 sneakers by participating in the actual gameplay of Fortnite. And so that's just, I mean, looking at raw numbers, Fortnite has 250 million actives in the last 30 days alone.
Yes.
So the idea here is it's presenting this really interesting co-branded opportunity to start making productive digital fashion objects having utility inside of an environment in real time.
But they're not NFTs.
I don't think they're NFTs yet. And I think this is, I think Dot Swoosh's articulation of the problem is for these objects that they're minting or like that people are owning to one day be, you know, owned by public private keys. But right now everything is, I think for UX reasons, for onboarding reasons, things are I think they're tranching and sequencing out what digital ownership is. So I don't expect, you know, everything to be perfectly decentralized and distributed and leveraging the core value prop of this technology on day one. But I do think it's inevitable that Dot Swoosh and Dot Swoosh objects are owned, you know, sovereignly. And I think for them, it's more about sequencing and getting the right 250 million active users participating with this stuff without the frictions of Web3 until they're ready or until they can build a compelling enough product.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where, you know, if you're going to do an integration with someone like Fortnite and you're going to, you know, offer this up to these, you know, this big of a platform, you don't want to like, step one is just get the sneakers out there and get them actually on characters. Step two is, okay, this little fly is coming after me. Step two is, do we actually convert these into NFTs?
Yes.
And then what does that look like? The good news is that Dot Swoosh is, as a platform, a Web3 platform. So the capabilities technically do exist.
Yeah.
The question is this a sequencing thing or not? Like, are, you know, a year from now, are they going to be like, okay, cool, that was fun. It's just like a skin or anything else that you can wear around, or can we now take these out as digital assets and move them into different places?
My view is that on some timeline, that's inevitable.
Yeah.
Right. Because the benefits, as we know, of being able to sovereignly own a digital object is better than some, you know, incumbent or private company, like organizing where that value can move and trade and who can actually own it. It's like the history of, you know, digital ownership has always been throttled by this third party intermediary, which prevents some really interesting use cases from existing. So on some timeline, I think, you know, it's inevitable that these things end up on a distributed ledger, but for now it just doesn't make sense and that's okay.
Yeah.
And like, let's onboard people into actually feeling what it's like to own a digital object, even if it's, you know, currently the ownership structure is such where Fortnite or Nike actually owns the property.
It's so funny how we, I would say in general, just get so locked up in this idea that, in this echo chamber, that we are NFTs. And you look at Sam's stats that he presents and it's like, you know, let's just call it, I'm just making numbers up, but I'm not too far off. Let's call it like 9,000 unique wallets trading per day or whatever it may be. And then you look at Fortnite's numbers and you're like, 250 million people a month.
Yes.
You look at, I heard a number around Roblox the other day. It was like 50 some million plus daily active users.
Yes.
And you're like, this is nothing.
Totally.
We're like, I used to say we're in the first inning of this.
It's parking lot, dude.
It's not even parking lot. No, like we got in the car maybe, and then we got an hour to drive to the ballpark. Like,
totally.
It's very, we're very early days.
But like we all know, so to this point, like I think the Fortnite is something that I often point to, or Counter-Strike skins, like these emerging younger generations, the affinity they have for avatars, for immersive environments, for digital objects and owning these things, whether it's skins or assets or little mini in-game currency tokens, that is the proof of concept. Mm-hmm. The back end, like how that stuff is actually owned, that's going to get optimized towards blockchains over time just because the tech stack is better. But as a proof of concept, it's stuff like this that's actually going to move the needle for hundreds of millions of people to own an NFT one day.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think this enabled with Web3, like, so if you were similar to what Reddit did when they created all these, you know, stealth wallets where you really didn't know you were holding an NFT, but you're holding an NFT.
Yes.
If that's what Fortnite did here, and then all of a sudden those Nikes were real tradable, you know, on some type of marketplace, and oh, surprise, they're NFTs.
Yeah.
then you've activated hundreds of millions of wallets, or let's just call it, so say 10, 20 million people actually get these as, yeah, as collectibles.
Yeah.
Like now you've got a market, you've got some liquidity. Like now we're off to the races.
Yes.
A few other game companies jump on board and we've got some real use cases that aren't about the speculation, that aren't about the commoditization of NFTs. They're really bringing in the average consumer, which I'm here for. Like that's, yeah, that's really exciting.
Totally. So just another reason to be excited about consumer Web3 and things we're seeing. It's like the trend lines continue to converge into this one grand trend line.
Yeah. Awesome. I know we're over on the story. Did you want to touch on this dopamine machines real quick?
Eli, go for
it. We have to. We have to.
Go for it, Amanda.
Oh, Amanda, what do you got?
Oh, I'm not. I don't do it. I just want you to talk about it because I think it's such a great project. Okay.
Yeah.
No. I would say like Stevie P, an incredible ArtBlox artist, has done some really, really fun, very like esoteric and wild drops before on ArtBlox, and I think this is probably the most complex and the best of the things that he's done. It is audio, visual, animated with sound. It's incredible. Why don't you kick it off, Eli, and give us the actual like art side of it all?
No.
I think it's just a cool meme drop.
Yeah. No, I think you hit it. I mean, this is in line with what ArtBlox, I think, on the curation board has been trying to do more of, which is augment really conceptually interesting projects that have multiple layers. And this is just such a fun collection to go through the outputs. Stevie P is an amazing artist and amazing follow on Twitter. And in the spirit of our what we used to do, and we may come back to it at some point, the under one ETH picks. And of course, that's never with the context that we're mentioning something because we think it will ultimately be worth more. But just in terms of a filter for mentioning a project, I think the floor on these is 0.25. That's around where it minted this Wednesday. And the opportunity to collect from Stevie. I mean, like these are works that I could easily have on a digital display in my house. And it's a conversation starter and also just super fun. So wanted to mention that. But, you know, kudos to ArtBlox and Derek, you're on the curation board. So kudos to you going deep on the conceptual art side. Love to see these coming out.
Yeah. And the only other thing I'll add, other than for people to go check out Stevie P, and he's got some fun experiments around money and currency, is just like generative text in general is something that I love and feel strongly about it. Daniel Calderon Arenas, DCA, his third of the Gen project. So Gen 3 was a generative text experiment that I became a very quick fan of a few years ago. Maya Mann launched a project called Fake It Till You Make It, I believe last year. This is another one in that lineage of generative text projects, which are super fun and just urge people to kind of dig in and investigate because I think it's different than let's just call it like the stuff that I think ArtBlox is most well known for.
It definitely doesn't pass the wall test in terms of that you could print it out and put it somewhere and it's a beautiful print, right? But it is there's something else that's there.
I'm definitely getting it. I was one of the first.
Wait, he's doing. Yeah, I think I saw him say that he would give out for the first 100 mints. It's just printed on computer paper, right? From his mom's house. Is it real? Is that true?
I think that's real. I was one of the first 100 minters so that I could get one of those prints. So I hope to God that that's true.
I love that. We got to have Stevie on the podcast at some point. He's a character, so excited to dig in with him soon.
Big fan of Stevie.
Yeah, this is awesome. I really love these. I think it's just like a fun idea. It reminds me, you know when you see an artist where you're just like, oh, you're just so different than a lot of the same stuff that we typically see. You know, I thought that the first time I saw an X copy or something where it's just like you're loud in a very unique way.
Point of view, your work gets branded with like an identity based on who you are. And it's almost like, you want artists to make work that they want to make and not feel like they're serving the song or like serving the public, that they are able to capture their identity and imbue the work that they create over time with it. And every artist, that we talk about on the show has in some degree done that, but with Stevie, it feels like it's so different and unique and zany and it's clear that this is an important part of his practice.
Yeah, these are awesome. And if you're wondering why I can't navigate these, the Apple mouse is the worst thing ever Apple ever invented.
Whose decision was it to put the cord plug-in on the bottom of these things? It drives me nuts. You can't use it while it's charging.
Yeah, we need to get a trackpad. Anyway, that was my bad. If you saw me going to the desktop for a second for no apparent reason. All right. I think that's about it for the show, yeah?
Great show.
Great show. Thank you, everyone. Amanda, any last comments from the actual community? Eli, any last hot takes? You wearing shorts?
I am.
Oh, let's see those knees.
Let's see those knees. Let's go.
Awesome. Well, you good, Amanda? Or
Yeah, we're good. We're good. There's a lot of people just having fun. Still kind of talking about the 6551 technology. A lot of people really excited about that. I just want to say thanks for everybody. I wanted to kind of talk a little bit more about dopamine machines because I'm just seeing it like play in the background, but we can kind of move on and wrap up. I just love this collection. It's a great one. Thank you all so much for hanging out.
Yeah, great show. Great to have John on as well. Remember to check out World Flags on Art Blocks on June 28th. And we appreciate everyone that tuned in today. Happy Friday. Great Hunter Proof.
We did it, dude.
Another one is done, and we'll see what fashion advice we can bring to the table next week.
We're coming for you, Eli.
See y'all soon. We'll be right back.